Wow, oh wow, episode one of A Shot in the Dark, now on The Daily Wire. I am beyond excited right now. I came in essentially skipping into work today because this has been a dream of mine and now it is about to be realized. So let's just back this up. If you are a person and you were formerly watching A Shot in the Dark on Parler, you know exactly what this is about. I want you to know that we are going to recreate those first 10 or 11 episodes. And if you are new to this series, maybe somebody sent it to you and said you should take a look at this. Maybe you're a mom-to-be, you're already a parent, you're expecting a second child. First and foremost, I want you to know that I know that I, when it comes to politics, am an acquired taste. If you are somebody who disagrees with me politically, I don't care. I'm glad that you are here. This is not going to be political whatsoever. I think that what I do with A Shot in the Dark, which we are obviously going to get into, is without a doubt the most important work that I have ever done. It has been my most important contribution, I think, to the world because it concerns our children. And I have been transformed as a parent. I have been transformed by my experiences with vaccines and with Big Pharma. And this show is going to cover so much more than just vaccines and medicine. I want to eventually talk about food, all the decisions that we are making day in and day out. But it does begin, of course, with vaccines. A Shot in the Dark. If you are wondering what it was or how it got started, I really think it was God's timing, first and foremost, just to come right out with it. I do not vaccinate my children. I know that for some of you, that might seem insane. If you had asked me growing up about people that did not vaccinate their children, I would have said they are insane. The slur of calling somebody an anti-vaxxer has been tremendously effective throughout my lifetime. And I thought it was the crazy, crunchy people who wanted their children to die that didn't vaccinate their children. But obviously, as I said before, your life experiences transform you. And I had a life experience that transformed me in the form of me being vax injured. But how was this God's timing? Okay. Well, I had my child and I had one of the COVID babies. My son, he's now a 2 and a couple of months old, very healthy. And what really happened was during the time of COVID, it was unique because I think for the first time, individuals were willing to hear a different perspective on medicine, a different perspective on vaccines. And I think a big reason for that was just the amount of censorship surrounding just the COVID vaccine that alerted a lot of people. For example, we were getting in trouble if we shared our lived experiences on social media. So what do I mean? Obviously, this is no longer, it doesn't seem to be a policy on Facebook. But if you had marched in and you were, I am definitely want to be the first person in line to get the vaccine, and that's totally fine if you were that person. But if you then got the vaccine and then went onto Facebook during this time of mass censorship and you said, oh man, I was sick for 3 days after it. I feel worse after getting the vaccine. Your account could have been hit. Your account could have been frozen. Facebook had this unique policy at that time. But even if what you were sharing was true, if it created vaccine hesitancy, then they could take out your account. And I think for a lot of people, it just made them uncomfortable because you want people to be able to talk freely about their experiences. So I think the timing of me creating A Shot in the Dark, and again, it was not about COVID. We never discussed the COVID vaccine whatsoever. It was the perfect time. People, I think, were more receptive to the message. And the message really is that I am not going to try to convince you not to vaccinate your children. That is not what I am being tasked with. It is not what is in my heart or soul to do. What I want to give you instead is information. I want you to be able to, as a parent, not do something under duress, not do something because somebody is saying to you, if you don't, your children are going to die. That doesn't seem like a healthy relationship to have with anybody. I want you to be able to make an informed decision, to actually know what the risks were before they ever even came up with the vaccine, how many people were actually dying of this illness, and what the risks are today. How many people are becoming ill with this? How effective has the vaccine even been? And I think that's fair. I don't even understand how it could be plausible for an individual to say that parents don't have a right to that information, that parents should just blindly trust doctors and should blindly trust medical professionals. I want you to have enough information that you feel confident as a new parent or as an old parent talking to your pediatrician and saying, well, what about this? I see this information on the CDC website. And by the way, just to tell you right off the bat, I am not going to use shady sources throughout this process. You're not going to be, well, I found this on Reddit and I want to know what you think about this. I want to be above and beyond here. I want to use mainstream sources. I want to use CDC data. I want to take a look at the FDA inserts when I talk about what can happen if you give your child a vaccine. These are things that the pediatrician does not supply you, which should be astounding to you. You should think to yourself, you can't imagine people being able to give your child a snack and then saying, what's in the snack? What are the ingredients? And them saying, we're not allowed to actually tell you, just eat the snack. You would say that makes no sense. So before I get into my background story with vaccines and what caused, I guess, my radical shift in my position, I also just want to talk about gut instincts, because I think it's really important that parents don't just ignore their subconscious. We're basically told, just ignore your gut instincts, ignore that voice in your head that's saying this is wrong, wrong, wrong. No, your gut instinct when it comes to parenting is supreme. I think especially if you're a mom, I think God has designed us in a way where we are just so attached to our children and so plugged in that we, if you're like me, I know the octave of my child's cry. I know when he's actually hurt, when he's not really hurt, when he's playing it up, and when he just wants attention. God gave us that. We actually possess that instinct for a reason. So there were a couple of things to me, even before I decided I was fully against vaccines, that I registered as weird. First and foremost, if you know anything about my backstory, I did not grow up with any money. And if you are surrounded by people who don't have a lot of money, one thing that you will know that is true is that poor people always stick to the vaccine schedule. They 100% trust their doctors. I do not know a single person growing up in my environment that did not get vaccines. Something that was weird is that as my circles became wealthier, I was suddenly being exposed to more people that didn't vaccinate their children. That instantly registered to me as weird. And I'm talking about, I could name for you celebrities that do not vaccinate their children. Very wealthy, well-known celebrities who choose not to vaccinate their children. So just an instant question that I think I started asking myself is, why? If these are life-saving vaccines and people are going to die without them, why would somebody who has more education and more access to resources choose to opt out of this? Doesn't make sense. So that's just a simple gut instinct question that I started to ask myself, which I thought was quite odd. A second thing is I realized that there are such unbelievably conflicting messages when you become a new parent. And I'm going to give you an example. We're not going to talk about DTaP today, but let's talk about the ingredients that are in the DTaP shot very briefly, because I want to make a point. So this is from the CDC website, and it just tells you what's in the DTaP vaccine. And it says that there is a 0.5 milliliter dose, which contains 6.7 limit of flocculation of diphtheria toxoid. And then it says that it contains tetanus toxoid and not more than 0.17 of a milligram of aluminum. It then says the residual formaldehyde content is a less than 0.02%, and the vaccine contains a trace amount of thimerosal. Now, guys, I want to also just say to you that as we go through these things, I am certain that I'm going to mispronounce ingredients and all of these words. It is totally fine. I don't want you to allow people to convince you that if you can't say these terms, that means you don't know what you're talking about. That is one of the things that I find to be increasingly annoying about Big Pharma. It's like, if you don't know how to pronounce this word, then you're no longer allowed to read it. And that is complete BS. It's okay to mispronounce words. We'll start getting it right as we get into this. So just look at those ingredients. You go, wow, that sounds like a lot. Is this really allowed am I allowed to inject this in my child's arm? They say it's trace amounts, no big deal. But a conflicting message here is that they also tell you while you're pregnant that everything you do, even a trace amount, could be harmful for your child. Case in point. The same CDC tells you that despite the fact that it is perfectly safe for you to give your child multiple vaccinations in one visit, which contain these aluminums, they also tell you that when you introduce your children to food, it should be just one at a time. So if you were giving your child organic food, I don't know, like peanuts, it just one at a time. You got to be very careful as you're introducing new foods in case your child has an allergy. Or my favorite is that when you're pregnant, God forbid, you have half a glass of wine. Oh my God, how could you do that? You'd be poisoning your child. Formaldehyde, totally fine. Trace amounts, a little bit of wine, not okay. that just to me registers as something that is a little weird. And again, I'm not advocating that women should go and drink wine or consume alcohol while they're pregnant. Of course, everything, all of these things could have a downside, but it is strange that the messaging is that everything that you do could harm your child, but everything that we do, including injecting your child with formaldehyde and aluminums and other metals, is perfectly safe and it could not possibly bring your child any harm, even though these same vaccine inserts are going to tell you the exact opposite when we get into the risks. So here is just essentially, I'm just jumping in here and showing you a different link of what I'm talking about. This is the CDC website saying that there is no known safe amount of alcohol use during pregnancy or while trying to get pregnant. There is no safe time for alcohol use during pregnancy. All types of alcohol are equally harmful, including all wines and beer. Okay, guys, so if you have a beer, you're going to really harm your child. There's no known safe amounts. Metals, totally fine. So that's something that is odd. And I also want to just show you, back in 1962, these are the vaccine doses that were administered to children in the United States. So back in 1962, there were just 5 vaccine doses administered to children for polio, for smallpox, and for DTP. Fast forward to 1983, and you can see and look through this. Now you need more doses of DTP because I suppose it wears off. Now they've added MMR, they have TD, they have OPVs. And just to back that up quickly, I'm just going to show you, this is actually from the CDC. This is a chart of those doses that I just showed you that are supposed to be given to children. Okay. Now let's jump to 2018. Now there are 72 doses that children are to receive. There's more today because I believe they've now added COVID. I'm not positive about that. I'm pretty sure they've added COVID and you need multiple COVID shots. At least they're trying to add COVID as a mandatory vaccine. 72 doses that are administered to children today. So I'm going to ask a question for those of you that are my age, maybe you're a little bit younger. Do you feel that the children today are healthier than we were? I was born in 1989. When you look at the children today, these children that are receiving between 72 and 75 doses of vaccines, do you go, thank goodness for medicine because these children are so healthy? My answer to that is absolutely not. In fact, what I would say is that I have never thought that children were weaker or more pathetic in terms of their allergies. Kids seem to be allergic to everything, things that we couldn't even dream up when we were young. I babysat for a young girl. She had an egg allergy. She had a milk allergy and she had a tree nut and a peanut allergy. When I dropped her off to her daycare, tree nuts and peanuts were banned because there were just way too many children that had these allergies. So they banned it entirely. You know, this, some airlines, they ban peanuts because people have such bad allergies. When I was a child, I distinctly remember the name of the girl in our school who had a peanut allergy because it was so rare. I was like, what a freak. Why is she allergic to peanuts? Her name was Kamisha Bias. I'll never forget it. She had to step outside if anybody opened M&Ms, if anybody had a birthday party and there were nuts. She was so allergic, she had to step outside. And it actually serves as a vivid memory of me in elementary school and in middle school because it was so odd. Now it's so not odd that they're just banning it. They're just saying this is not even a safe thing. We're not even going to run the risk. Why? Why? How could that happen? There's also other things today that just register to me as very odd. One thing being that people are just struggling to have children. There are so many people that have fertility issues. And again, I'm not connecting this dot and saying that this is definitely from vaccines or it's definitely not, but it's something that's weird. You know, our grandparents had 9, 10, 11, 12, quite literally. My grandfather was one of 12. And these people were certainly not getting vaccines. And you look today and people are struggling to have one child. They're having to turn to IVF. They're having to turn to more science and they just can't figure out why. And I think that there are tons of things that we should be discussing. And one thing that is unique is this explosion of vaccinations that have been taking place. I also want to just attack initially the official narrative, rather, that vaccines make us healthier, right? That is kind of the narrative. Vaccines make us healthier and you should get more and more and more. And every time there's a vaccine that becomes available, you should roll up your sleeve and you should get the shot. Something that you should know is that the United States, of every country in the entire world, administers the most vaccines, okay? United States administers the most vaccines. So if you follow that logic, then we should find that children in the United States are the healthiest, right? I want you to take a look at this chart. This chart, just to explain it to you, it's the OECD chart. The OECD stands for the Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development. It's a unique forum where the governments of 37 democracies, this is according to Google, with market-based economies collaborate to develop policy standards to promote sustainable economic growth. So the idea is like these are other governments that are just like us that we can compare ourselves to. So when you say that you're making an OECD comparison, it means that you're looking at other countries that have a similar structure to ours, that have similar access, access to medicine as we would have, that are our form of this group. So take a look at this chart of OECD countries. And what this chart is comparing are infant mortality rates amongst these countries. And you can see when you look at the bottom that for infant mortality rates, the United States ranks number 36. Behind countries like Croatia, Latvia, Hungary, Belgium, Austria, Greece, Israel, Korea, Spain, Czech Republic, Slovenia, Japan, Finland, Norway, Estonia, all countries which use way less vaccines than us. And it tells you at the top that the infant mortality rate is defined as the number of deaths of children under 1 year of age expressed per every 1,000 live births. Now, what's really interesting about this chart to me is that, just so you know, the United States gives the most money to all this bureaucracy. And so they feel the need to qualify this. If you keep reading on, it says, some of the international variation in infant mortality rates is due to variations among countries in registering practices for premature infants. The United States and Canada are two countries which register a much higher proportion of babies weighing less than 500 grams with low odds of survival, resulting in higher reported infant mortality. I looked into this, and this is absolute BS. I could find only two countries where they were weighing the metric in a different way that would have impacted this. So I encourage you to look even deeper into this. But the idea that they even need to qualify this signals to me that they don't want people looking deeper into this. So like, oh, it is kind of weird. The United States is not number one here, but don't pay attention to this because the United States is kind of controlling the OECD data. And we want you to know that it's not a big deal that our infants are registering 36 behind all of these countries. So I'm going to put all this information up, guys. I want you to be able to access it and to assess it yourself. And you can go through each and every one of these countries and determine how they register live births, something that Big Pharma is banking on you not having the time to do. Make the time. It is very telling that America is ranked so lowly in terms of health and in terms of infant mortality. All right, so now I want to jump into my personal story. I call this my personal shot in the dark because it is what has set me on this path. And it is something that when it happened to me, it was, why, God, why? And now I see it is because I've been given this platform to share this story and to inspire a lot of women to share their stories. I've actually never seen more women respond than when I talk about the Gardasil shot, which is one of the vaccines that was administered to me when I was about 19 or 20 years old, and the vaccine that I was injured from. This was my big wake-up call. So I'll give you the background story. Again, I was 19 or 20 years old when there suddenly was this really big push for women to get the Gardasil vaccine, which was a three-part series. And I'm going to show you an old commercial from that time because the message that was being delivered was that if you wanted to avoid getting cancer, you would get this vaccine. Like, one way that you could mark yourself safe from cervical cancer was to get the Gardasil vaccine. Here is one such commercial from back then.
Each year in the U.S., thousands of women learn they have cervical cancer. I could be one less.
One less statistic. One less.
Because now there's Gardasil, the only vaccine that may help protect you from the four types of human papillomavirus that may cause 70% of cervical cancer.
So I saw these commercials, obviously, like every other young woman, and I fully trusted my doctors just like every other young woman. And I went to my gynecologist and for my annual exam, and he said, there's a new vaccine and you absolutely have to get it. And I said, what is it? He said, Gardasil. It's good. It's going to prevent you from getting cancer down the line. Now that I'm older, what a strange thing. We don't have a cure to cancer. Why would I believe that we have something that can just fully, a shot that could prevent you from getting cancer? Now it presents so many red flags, but at the time I was young and I was dumb. And just so you guys know, the Gardasil shot was approved back in 2006. So again, I think I was about 19 years old when this happened. So anyways, I rolled up my sleeve to get the first shot, and immediately after he administered it, I hit the ground and I passed out, which I never pass out. I am not a person that faints. I am not a person that is queasy. So this was very out of the norm for me personally. And when I came to, what he essentially said to me was, did you eat breakfast this morning? And I said, well, no, I didn't eat breakfast. He said, well, that's why you passed out. It's okay. You know, not a big deal, but you should make sure before you get the second shot that you eat breakfast. So I was a little spooked. You know, they sat me down, gave me some water. I left thereafter, but he had given me what I assumed was a valid reason for this happening. I obviously hadn't eaten breakfast that morning. Went back to get my second shot and made sure that I ate breakfast that morning. And when I sat down, I just thought there was no plausibility that I was going to pass out. The nurse came in, she gave me the injection, and this time my reaction was much more severe. Not only did I pass out, and I remember this moment especially horrifically because she had asked me to disrobe because afterwards I was going to have an exam. So I was essentially just wearing a shirt and one of those little pieces of paper, you know, to cover your parts. And I had passed out, fallen off of the chair, or the table rather, that I was on. And when I came to, I began having what can only be described as a mini seizure. I began shaking and I began vomiting profusely. The two gynecologists came flying down the hallway. I had the nurse in there. They were all over me trying to take care of me. And I just, even as I'm recapping this to you, I just remember how absolutely traumatized and scared I was, not knowing what was happening to my body, not knowing why I was vomiting, not knowing why I was shaking. I've never had these things happen to me ever before in my life. And it was very obvious that my gynecologists were spooked. And when they got me up and got me into the chair, and you can imagine how mortifying this is. This happened to have been two male gynecologists that ran this particular firm, and I'm completely naked having a seizure. I mean, from the bottom down, completely naked having a seizure. And he said to me right away that you should discontinue the series. You should not get the third one. This is a reaction that you should not be having to this. I remember just crying hysterically. I was just so scared, you know. When something happens to you medically that's never happened to you medically, it's like an out of body experience. And I was traumatized leaving the office. They obviously waited until I was good enough, gave me water, sat me down for a long time, kept asking me if I was okay. I said I was fine and I left. The residual the residual drama that took place, I didn't feel like myself for years after getting that second installment of the Gardasil shot. I had a fatigue that I can't even describe to you that lasted for years. I felt like my brain didn't work the same since getting that vaccine. I know that I have shared this story before, and so many women have written into me. This really seems to be the one vaccine that so many women have had reaction to. It's stunning to me that it's still on the market. I've had people say that they were very shortly thereafter diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, all sorts of stories. You'll obviously see them in the comments today of people that were similarly impacted by this vaccine, people that similarly had seizures after getting this vaccine, and now this vaccine comes with some very severe warnings. You can imagine me going through this process really alone and crying as I was sitting in my car about to drive home and asking myself, what did I just put into my body? Actually, a more to the point question was, why did I just put this into my body? I don't even know what it was that I just put into my body, and I don't know why I put it into my body. Why would I just blanket trust a doctor? I passed out the first time. That should have been the first, hello, Candace, maybe not for you. And now I've had what amounts to a mini seizure in an office, and I'm sitting here and I realize I don't know what was even put into my body. I don't even know what it was that I was reacting to. And then I began to conduct some research, and what I discovered astonished me, and I think it is going to astonish you as well. So as I said, the Gardasil vaccine was approved back in 2006. So what I want you to pay attention to is 2005, right? What led us to this moment of them suddenly saying that we need to do this push and we need to make people fearful to get this vaccine? And what better way to make people fearful than to use the word cancer? Cancer is something that terrifies us all. We all think about cancer. We see commercials with people that have cancer. We know people that have suffered from cancer, and we know how horrific cancer is. And if you use a term, if you use a phrase like this is going to prevent you from getting cancer, you are obviously going to inspire people to act out of fear. So I want to take a look for you. I want you guys to take a look rather with me at what the cervical cancer rates were in 2005 in the United States before they rolled out the Gardasil exam. So first and foremost, it's important to note that the female population in the United States in 2005 was 149.9 million. Okay, that's an approximate 149.9 million females that were living in the United States. Of the 149.9 million females in the United States, there were just 10,370 cases of cervical cancer, okay, before the rollout of Gardasil. So I've done the math for you. You can fact check this math for you. That means that if you were a female living in the United States in 2005, you had just a 0.0069% chance of being diagnosed with cervical cancer before they rolled out this preventative vaccine. So you are seeing, by the way, a chart that we are sharing. This chart can be found on the American Cancer Society's website. Again, we are not going to use any shady sources for the amount of cases of cervical cancer from 2005 before they ever rolled out this vaccine. Now, they've essentially decided, Big Pharma all by itself, that this vaccine is so successful that they have now not just said it's for women, it's now for men. So if you're watching this now, you're like, what are you talking about, Cass? What do you mean just for women and cervical cancer? Men are getting this vaccine too. Yeah, eventually they decided to extend it to men, which was confusing to me because, again, that big push, which you just saw in the commercial, was all about women preventing themselves from cervical cancer. So how did they magically realize this formula was also going to help men if a man does not have a cervix? It's very confusing to me. It doesn't matter. I'm not a scientist. I'm not a doctor. So just trust them. So what they say to men is that this could prevent you from getting penile cancer, which is just not even on the map of cancers that men can get. I mean, I will get into that later, but just know that they have now extended this to men. So that must mean that it was such a astounding success for the female population that they said, men, you should get this as well. So let's fact check how successful the Gardasil shot was for females. So these numbers are from 2022. In 2022, there were 167.5 million females living in the United States, okay? Of the 167.5 million females living in the United States, there were 14,100 cases of cervical cancer. Now, the math on that means that if you were in a female in the United States, and this is after almost 20 years of having, almost two decades of having this wonderful vaccine to prevent from cervical cancer, your chances of getting cervical cancer today are 0.0084%. That's weird because that means that cervical cancer rates have gone slightly up in the United States since the rollout of the Gardasil vaccine. How does that make sense? By what metric are they determining that this Gardasil vaccine, which has injured so many women, myself included, should not be discontinued and rather should be extended to the entire male population? If you think that's shady, that they've extended it to the male population because now they've decided that it can help with penile cancer and all sorts of cancers, then you're going to find it even stranger that they're now mandating the shot, the HPV shot. They are mandating it in Rhode Island, in DC, in Puerto Rico, in Virginia, and then by the way, just in DC and Virginia, it's for girls only. And parents can only opt out if they have a religious or moral belief against it. But in New York, this is where it gets absolutely insane. They attempted to pass a bill in 2019 to require that all children have to have the Gardasil vaccine to enter any school, including daycare. To say that that infuriates me would be the greatest understatement because of how I suffered that vaccine. When you are injured from a vaccine and then you learn that they are trying to give this vaccine to toddlers, it is a kind of evil that I can't even put into words. When I know that just amongst my friends, how many people have had a bad reaction to Gardasil. Some people didn't. My sister didn't, by the way, as one example. But to think that they would, with, again, no metric of success that they can point to, demand that children get this vaccine drives me insane. It drives me up a wall. Now, let's also be clear that it doesn't say that this is going to prevent all cervical cancers. They're talking specifically about HPV, right? HPV is an STD that they claim can lead to cervical cancer, right? And this vaccine is a vaccine against HPV, a sexually transmitted disease. So I'm going to ask you to explain to me why children in daycare would be taking a vaccine against HPV, which is a sexually transmitted disease. What are they concerned about with HPV? You want to know something else about HPV? According to the CDC's website, for HPV, the sexually transmitted disease, which I had never heard of until they suddenly wanted me to take the Gardasil shot. We didn't learn about HPV in school at the time that I was in school, until the Gardasil shot. Then we all started hearing about it. Well, for 90% of individuals, HPV clears up without any treatment at all. A miraculous STD. You don't even need to treat it. 90% of the time, it clears up all on its own. But it doesn't matter because they now want children, who I would hope are not sexually active, to get this vaccine, which is potentially going to prevent them from getting sorts of cancers that have actually increased by rate in this country since the rollout of this vaccine. Again, does any of that make sense to you? What sort of politicians would put up a bill trying to require all children to have this vaccine to enter school? Who is in their pocket would be the right question. Who is lobbying for this? I think the answer is going to be Big Pharma, because what is clear to me is that this wasn't about health. If this was about health and this was about determining the success of a product that was on the market, Gardasil would be revoked. But nope, it's not. Instead, you will come across people that recommend that your children get it. All right, so what is Big Pharma? Because you're going to hear me say that a lot, and I want to make sure that you are clear in your understanding of what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a crime syndicate. I am talking about the likes of El Chapo and Pablo Escobar. We sort of watched these fantastical depictions of all that they did, which was horrible and terrific. But we watch it and we go, oh my gosh, it's so crazy to think Mexico and Colombia and the drug cartel, and that Pablo Escobar got so much power that he was electing people in office, that they rigged certain elections, that El Chapo became so powerful that he was able to, that they had politicians in their pockets. We watch this stuff as if it's a fantasy that's so far away. This could never happen in the United States of America. The problem is it already is happening in the United States of America. What I want to make clear to you, and what I think will become clear to you over time, is that what they dreamed of, America accomplished. What they dreamed of was a marriage between the drug cartels, the drug criminals, and the government, right? In lockstep. Could you imagine if, rather than having to hide his cocaine, he could have said, well, let's put it in medicine and sell it. Let's just sell it to people and say that it's healthy for them. Let's put it in the form of an injection and tell people that they need this or else their children are going to be able to die. That's the dream that they had down in Mexico. And that is the reality that we have in America today. And I want to talk about some of the power that they have. They have power via their money. They have power via their influence. They have an entire network of fact checkers. I think if you did not realize how powerful Big Pharma was, you must be aware of it now today after COVID, in regards to the mass censorship that we saw, that we were not able to freely communicate with one another because they had decided that this vaccine was going to save your life. And they have now since walked back a lot of their claims about the vaccine. But if you had said those things at first, if you had said, I don't think it's going to prevent people from being able to transmit the virus, once upon a time, you would have had your accounts locked and taken down. Now they admit that. Now they say, well, you can get the vaccine and you can still spread COVID and you can still get COVID. But once upon a time, they said that you weren't allowed to say that. That's a scary thing, that people could be telling the truth and being penalized for that. And I've never seen that happen ever in this country until the time of COVID. I want you to know that Big Pharma does control politicians, and we are going to eventually get into the lobbying, that there are more pharmaceutical lobbyists in Washington, D.C. than you have congressional representatives. That is insane. Right? They have an unbelievable budget. They have an unbelievable amount of money and influence in DC. And we are going to get into just how influential they can be, what it takes to even get a shot on the schedule. Not much. It's just a little bit of money, rather. And we're also going to talk about the financial incentives for doctors to keep kids on vaccine schedules. one such story, obviously, I made a decision not to vaccinate my child. And I will never forget the time I was living in Washington, D.C., when my son was born. And we went to this wonderful pediatrician and we basically sat down with her and had a meeting while I was 9 months pregnant. And I said, you know, I don't think I want to vaccinate my child. At the time, I said, maybe we will delay it, but we definitely won't be keeping him on the schedule. And she said, you know, if you don't keep him on the schedule, then we can't have him here. And I sort of pressed her on that. I said, what do you mean we can't have him? She said, well, we can't have unvaccinated children in the building. And I said, well, that's weird because aren't all the children unvaccinated until you vaccinate them? So once the child is born, you're happy to have them here when they're not vaccinated. You don't consider them vaccinated the entire schedule until after maybe the first 2 years before there's a break. So can you explain to me why it would be different if my child was not vaccinated, was sitting in the lobby, versus a child that was going to be vaccinated that was sitting in the lobby? And she couldn't answer the question. And then I realized and I discovered that these pediatricians are receiving kickbacks from the insurance. If they keep a child on the vaccine schedule, they're receiving money. There is a financial incentive to vaccinate your child, which is why even if you say, I just want to delay the schedule, they say your child can't be here. So is this about health? Is this about them actually wanting to make your child better? Or has this become about profit? Are they being motivated by profit? And since I know that no two children are the same, I have two children. There's me and my sisters are not the same. Our allergies are different. Like I said, I had a horrible reaction to Gardasil. My older sister had no reaction to Gardasil. How could you look a parent in the eye and say that we know that this one size fits all treatment is exactly what you need? What is motivating you saying something that we know to be so fundamentally untrue? Children are born different sizes. They have a different capacity to be able to take things in. No adults are the same, right? And yet this is the reason why they are so systematic at the pediatrician's office. Again, we're going to talk about that later in this throughout the series, the financial incentives that are motivating your pediatrician to say, I would rather you not be a child at this firm because I'm not going to make money off of your child. That's essentially what she was saying to me. And we did wind up finding a different pediatrician because we moved to Tennessee. The next thing that I want to talk about is fear. That is the number one element. They use fear as a driver. They know that there is no person that is more vulnerable than a new parent. There is nothing that is more motivating than the idea that your new baby is going to die unless you do exactly what they say. And that thing that they say always lines their pockets, right? And if you ask a question, I just remember the fears that I had as a first-time mom. I mean, the first time you leave the hospital, you're thinking in your head, like, are they really just going to let me take this baby? Is this responsible? I don't know what to do. It's a new baby. And they know those feelings that you have, which is why they come in and they say to you, this is what you have to do. They prey on that fear. They prey on how you are feeling as a new parent. They're constantly preying on your emotional vulnerabilities. They are preying on the fact that you don't feel secure as a parent. And when I talk about fear as a motivator, I just want to let you guys know when I had first announced that I was doing this series, when I was doing it outside of the Daily Wire, some of the tweets that we instantly got from doctors was absolutely stunning. So this is just one example. Dr. Sangeeta Reddy said, and by the way, just to make it clear, what I tweeted was this. I tweeted, in 2 weeks, I'm dropping a free video series, 11 episodes, to go through the history of every single childhood vaccination on the schedule. It's taken me almost 2 years to research. I want parents to truly have informed consent. There's nothing in that tweet that if you are a doctor should scare you. I said, I'm going to go through the history of childhood vaccination. Why would that scare you if I talk to parents about the history of vaccines? Like, hey, Gardasil was rolled out in 2006. Why would that scare you? Well, Dr. Sangeeta Reddy was terrified. She tweeted, this is truly terrifying. If we lose the battle on vaccine misinformation, it could have devastating hashtag public health consequences. The anti-vax movement may be focused on COVID-19 right now, but if they destroy public trust in childhood hashtag vaccines, imagine what impact on the world. Imagine the resurgence of polio, measles, whooping cough, childhood TB, etc. We must prevent this at all costs. I hope people do not dismiss the power many quote-unquote influencers have on the hashtag public health narrative. Wow, that is, she is terrified. Wow, all I said was, you know, discuss the history of some vaccines. And the doctors rush in. She tags the UN in this tweet. She wanted the United Nations to come and take a look at Candace Owens, saying she's going to talk to other mommies and daddies about vaccine history. She could not do this. She is not a doctor. What is she thinking? How dare parents talk to each other? How dare they look into the information? They can't understand the information. We're too stupid. We're just parents. You think that's bad? Wait till you see this guy's tweet, because the next one that I saw was even more to the point. And I actually have to say, I think I appreciate his honesty. Dr. Zachary Rubin came in and said, yeah, when millions of people follow a political commentator, a few people will start to be confused or empowered to question a safe and effective medical intervention. Could you imagine parents feeling empowered to question? He is telling you what he really thinks. I love this tweet because he is telling you what he really thinks. And you are absolutely correct, Dr. Rubin. My goal is to make parents feel empowered enough to ask questions. Because believe it or not, we have a right to do that. We have a right as parents to ask questions. And the idea that they had this reaction before I had even launched one episode, before I had actually said anything, they had such a visceral reaction to the idea that parents might become empowered enough to ask a question. That should tell you something, guys. That should make it very clear that they believe that they are authoritarian on the matter, that if you ask a question, you are stepping out of line, and that in my view, these are things that need to be changed. So let's talk about some of their bullying tactics outside of this fear complex that they try to create, outside of them saying, we are the authority and how dare you even ask us a question. What we're really facing, number one, is the non-expert problems. Essentially, they say, we are the doctors and you are not, and we should just trust them because they have fancy medical jargon. Like, for example, one term, hyperbilirubinemia. That really just means extreme jaundice. But of course, they say these really big words because they want you to feel stupid. And when they talk to each other, they sound so much more educated. Another tactic that they use is anachronisms. This is something that you will see over and over again, because I want you to recognize these tactics when you see them. Anachronism essentially is when they say, if you don't do exactly what we say, it's going to be just like the Spanish flu. You see this, that's what that doctor Sangeeta Reddy just did, right? She instantly said, we're going to have polio, we're going to have measles, we're going to be back in the 1800s, and all the kids are going to be dying of scarlet fever. They do these sorts of things, and they do love to bring up the Spanish flu of 1918. And it's completely ridiculous and entirely illogical. Obviously, in 1918, you're talking about an entirely different world. There can be no realistic comparison to illnesses that were suffered in 1918 versus 2023 in America. In 1925, so that's 7 years later, only half of American houses even had electrical power, okay? By the 1930s is when indoor plumbing and running water became readily available. So when they say it's going to be just like 1918, they're talking about a time when the majority of households didn't have running water and electricity. Ladies and gentlemen, it is never going to be just like the 1918 Spanish flu. And they know that. They know that. It's impossible. It's why they also, you'll see, use geographical anachronisms. They'll go to like, it's going to be just like, you know, what's happening in Africa. Oh, that's interesting, because in Africa, they don't have running water in certain places. So it's never going to be just like Africa. One of my operating theories here, and we're going to unpack that in later episodes, is that Big Pharma has taken the credit for what sanitation, basic sanitation, solved. Yes, with the explosion of running water and electricity and people that were better able to cleanse themselves, we saw a lot of diseases that were wiped away. And Big Pharma claimed credit. They said it was because of us, right? We did that. This is the reason why we don't have this anymore. But conspicuously missing is why we don't also have things that they didn't create vaccines for, like scarlet fever. There's no scarlet fever vaccine. How did scarlet fever just go away? How did all of these old diseases just go away? Well, because we got cleaner, right? We became more sanitized as a society, but they don't want you to think that. Instead, they want you to think that those things went away because thank goodness they created vaccines. Thank goodness they created Gardasil. Thank goodness they created the tetanus shot. Wait until we get into the history of the tetanus shot, guys. That is going to be insane. Then, of course, another bullying tactic that they use is emotional blackmail. We've kind of unpacked this. This is, if you don't do this, your child is going to die. This is good for your child. Why would you deprive them of this? What kind of a parent are you? How could you even ask this question? What's wrong with you? Do you want your kid to die? You do. I can't even believe you're asking the question. This was kind of the attitude that initial pediatrician had with me. It was sort of like, how could you even, like, wow, are you good? Like, you would even expose your child to anything? Like, we're telling you this is what's right. Why don't you just blanket trust us? And that is emotional blackmail. You shouldn't be making decisions because you arbitrarily believe that your child is going to die. You should be making decisions because you are informed and because you have knowledge and because you, yes, I hate to say it, Dr. Rubin, because you asked questions and you got reasonable answers. And finally, the last tactic that they use is they manipulate data and they manipulate definitions. And I don't really have to pitch this one to you because you saw this. Again, I believe that COVID was a blessing because I don't believe that people would have been so receptive to this message had it not have happened. You'll see this throughout. We're going to unpack polio as just one example where they just magically changed the definition of polio. They changed the diagnostic definition of polio, which led to a decrease in the amounts of polio. They said, well, that's no longer polio. In 1954, the AMA just changed it. And you'll see this happen over and over again. This happened throughout the times of COVID. So you saw COVID dip and COVID cases go up depending on how high the PCR tests were dialed. To give you one example of how they control data and definitions, and this one really infuriates me. It happened, I am from Connecticut. I grew up in Stamford, Connecticut. You guys know that probably by now. My sisters still live in Connecticut, and during the time of COVID, both of them were pregnant at the same time with their first child. And I remember them calling me, and they were so scared because the governor, the current governor, Ned Lamont, had sent out a tweet. And the tweet read, "It is with heartbreaking sadness today that we can confirm the first pediatric fatality in Connecticut linked to hashtag COVID-19. A six-week-old newborn from the Hartford area was brought unresponsive to a hospital late last week and could not be revived. Testing confirmed last night that the newborn was COVID-19 positive. This is absolutely heartbreaking. We believe this is one of the youngest lives lost anywhere due to complications relating to COVID-19. This is a virus that attacks our most fragile without mercy. This also stresses the importance of staying home and limiting exposure to other people. Your life and the lives of others could literally depend on it. Our prayers are with the family at this difficult time." Okay. I'm really going to try to stay calm in talking about this because I was the person who broke the story on this. And I was personally went to go pursue the truth of this because, as I said, my sisters were traumatized by this. You imagine you have your first children, you live in the state of Connecticut, and your leader, a governor, writes, authors this tweet that the first infant linked to COVID-19 has died. I am not kidding when I say that my little sister did not leave the house. She did not allow us to see the child. She was truly suffering a traumatic psychosis, worried that any person that touched her baby was going to give her baby COVID. And of course she felt this way. I mean, how would you feel as a new parent when this is the information that you get from an authority in Connecticut? But there was something about this tweet that I didn't like. I didn't like that he said a pediatric fatality linked to COVID-19. I responded and I said, what does that mean, linked to COVID-19? What are the details here? I decided to do some digging and I put out a public notice saying I'm from Connecticut and I believe that Ned Lamont is lying. And if anybody has information related to this death, please reach out to me. Somebody reached out to me and I am going to protect that person's identity. And they said he is 100% lying. The infant that died did not die from COVID-19. The infant had a mother who was a drug addict who accidentally smothered the infant to death. That is why the infant arrived unresponsive to the hospital, because the infant had been smothered by its own mother accidentally. And then after the infant arrived to the hospital, already unresponsive and dead, they decided to test the infant for COVID-19 with the PCR test that was dialed high. And they decided that the infant also had COVID. And so rather than telling parents this, Ned Lamont raced to be the first governor to say that we had an infant who died from complications related to COVID. The complications were not related to COVID whatsoever. I put this information out into the universe, and sure enough, he began to walk back. He refused to answer any questions pertaining to the death. Reporters were not aggressive enough in asking him questions. He essentially said he didn't even want to talk about the case anymore. Do you know how angry I am that this man is still the governor of Connecticut? Because he wanted to make international headlines related to infants dying from COVID, and he lied to the public and he traumatized mothers everywhere. There is a special place in hell that is reserved for Governor Ned Lamont. I believe that in the bottom of my heart, because you have to be a special kind of evil to do this to young mothers. So I revealed this information, and I am telling you that because we are talking about just how far they will go. They control the data. They control the definitions. So what he did was he had that infant tested, got that information, that PCR test said COVID positive, and then he controlled how that information was presented to the public by saying linked. Oh, and by linked, we mean in a postmortem, we decided that baby could have also had COVID according to this test that we dialed up. That is what we are facing when we talk about Big Pharma and their collusion with governments to censor information and to control the flow of information, because ultimately what they want to do is inspire you to act one way or another. And in this circumstance, he wanted to inspire parents to stay in their homes, to stay locked down in their homes with their children, and to, of course, when the vaccine became available, instantly get that vaccine. So we are going to pause there because we are already coming to the end of an hour. It goes by so fast, unbelievably. What we are going to be discussing in next episode is the vitamin K shots. It's just a vitamin, they say. It's just a vitamin. You are going to be shocked as we unpack that. You guys, I do also want to just let you know how excited I am to bring us a Daily Wire. It was not something that was ever on their radar. Obviously, I am not speaking for any of the other hosts or anybody that work at the Daily Wire when I say that I don't vax my children. It is not a Daily Wire perspective. But what essentially happened was I created that series personally and for free for everyone on the internet when I first did it, the first 11 episodes. And then my show here at the Daily Wire got picked up for five days a week. And I sat down with the executives and I said, you know, I am so grateful to be given a platform here at the Daily Wire. But the most important thing that I do is the shot in the dark stuff. The most important thing that I do is empowering parents to ask questions. And they were really receptive to it. And we talked about all the ways that we could grow it, because obviously we're going to run out of vaccines to talk about. And I want it to be bigger than that. There is so many more things that are impacting our children, so many more things that we can talk about. And I want to make sure that we keep this discussion going. I want your feedback. You guys, you can email me, Candace@dailywire.com, with any questions. I do want to find a place where we can plug all the links. Right now, we are going to keep the first few episodes free because we want people that maybe potentially, like I said early on, don't love Candace Owens and hate all of her viewpoints politically. We still want them to be able to access this information and to see what this show is about for a few episodes. Eventually, we will take it entirely behind the paywall because we have to. It is Big Pharma. And they will eventually come down and say that you are not allowed to even be having this discussion. So you can definitely get a jump by joining Daily Wire Plus to make sure that you have access to all of the episodes eventually. You can do that by clicking the link in the description and subscribing right now. And also you will see in the description that we are listing the links to all of the sources that we use in this week's episode. You guys, I am at my core really just a mom, and I am sure that I may make a mistake somewhere, and I give you my commitment that when I do that, I will always try to make a correction in the next episode. We are researching every piece of this. We are honing in on the details, but please remember that what I'm trying to do here is to make all of this very accessible to you. And I just want to appreciate you guys for sticking with me and for all of you that supported A Shot in the Dark when it really was just me in my home, sitting down with Savannah and one other person. And it's you guys are the reason that I brought it back. So thank you guys so much. Be sure to check out dailywire.com. Subscribe to Daily Wire Plus. We'll see you guys next week.